Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. We'll have Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the hiring of Tim Kelly as offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. So looking forward to that. We will get back into that that discussion coming up at 7:30 on the program here today. So looking forward to that as well. Joe, the Predators in action for the first time last night off of their bye week / all-star break. And one of the questions that we asked heading into the game last night was, all righty, they had won three games in a row. They had won 5 of 6 heading into the break. Is the break a good thing? Was the break a bad thing? Did it come at a good time? Did it come at a bad time? Players yesterday morning at morning skate seemed to think it came at a good time just based on, you know, the mental and physical grind of the schedule that was taking place before then. The evidence on the other side would suggest otherwise. An absolute clunker for the Predators last night. A big game against Vegas, and they fall 5-1 at home. They did score the first goal of the game. Matt Duchene scored to go up 1-0. Really, other than that, it was a total disaster last night for the Predators. They finished the game with 17 shots on goal, which is a very low number. And, Joe, they had 6 shots on goal after 2 periods of play last night, which I don't recall ever seeing before. I'm sure that I have. I just don't recall ever seeing anything like that. 6 shots on goal after 2 periods of play last night. Roman Josi discussed the game last night and just the thought on this performance coming out of the break and the bye week. Here's what Roman Josi had to say after the game last night.
Just kind of leave you scratching your head a little bit, Roman, after you guys have been playing so well in the 3 games going into the break?
Yeah, it's disappointing, obviously. Like I said before, it just wasn't a good game, and I think from start to finish, we just need to play better, and it's definitely disappointing because I feel like we gained some momentum, we played well, but we don't have time to wait around and see where things go. We got to get some points, so obviously we got to look at this one, but we got to look forward after that, and every game is huge.
So, Joe, obviously that's about as bad of a start out of the break as you could draw up for the Predators last night. What did you make of their performance, and what did that tell you about exactly where this team is last night following the 5-1 loss to the Vegas Golden Knights?
Yeah, they get you that quick point, and Preds pick to click and then take the rest of the night off.
Yeah, so, they did.
You know, real nice. No, it was seriously like – you know, for anybody who's ever gone to like peewee hockey games, you know, there's a lot of shots that don't actually become shots on goal. It was amazing, man. Because, I mean, they actually had like shot attempts was, you know, like a normal number. Like they couldn't get shots on net. And it took a huge run of 11 shots in the third period to finish with 17. But apart from that, and Josi also, you know, in his comments last night, I mean, he rightfully took the blame for basically giving the Golden Knights a couple early ones. And yep. I mean, the Preds were just, and in particular, you know, Josi with, you know, critical mistakes. It was just a bad performance. And I know someone tweeted at me last night about how, like, this is what they always do after the extended break. I don't recall if that's true or not. But I agree with what John Hines said after the game, which is, you know, there's no excuse. You know, everybody's on a big break. I know Duchene mentioned after the game that, you know, that they had less of a break than the Preds did. But, okay. I mean, actually, do we have the Duchene sound?
We can get that for you here in just a few minutes. But, frankly, I'm kind of tired of that stuff. Like, there's always some excuse with this group. And it's ridiculous. Like there is no excuse for coming out last night and playing the way that they did. They had 53 shot attempts last night and got 17 of them on goal. 53 shot attempts last night and got 17 on goal. I get
it. Hard to do.
It's one game. I understand that. And look, they're going to get 3 days in a row here of practice, I would assume, and maybe they're a little bit more dialed in / you know, got their sights adjusted heading into the game on Saturday against Philadelphia. But it just kind of always feels like there's some underlying excuse with this group, and it's ridiculous. There's no excuse for what we saw last night.
Oh, no. Oh, there's no excuse. It was bad hockey, and, you know, it's like, look, all those questions that John Glennon was asking about, you guys sure you want to break right now? You know, no, there's no choice there, but you have to figure out a way to come out and be ready to play. I will say it seemed last night like early, it seemed fine. They had energy. As you would expect, huge game. The crowd was good. It's the Golden Knights. I mean, this is a, you know, as you like to call them, this is a 4-point game. You know, the team you're trying to battle with for a playoff spot, you score the first goal. You know, it's a classic, you know, Duchesne from the right circle, and everything seems like it's going fine. Then you make a couple mistakes that end up in the back of your net, and it's like everything just disappeared. It's like you lost all, you know, all of your intensity and energy, which, again, like there's zero, speaking of no excuse, how could that be the case? Like, how could that be the reaction? But that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
It just looked like a, you know, just skating around the ice, you know, Preds on ice, you know. It was a pretty discouraging performance to come back from with.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Bob from Antioch, who wants to weigh in. Bob, thanks for calling in. Appreciate you. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I'm going to avoid talking about the evident lack of effort. To me, I'm going to see what you guys think about it. I've thought for a while that their talent level is not what we're sort of being told that it is. I think a lot of their guys are past their prime, and I just don't think that the talent level is good enough. And I wanted to see how you guys felt about that.
Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. I mean, I think that's the crux of where they're at right now. Joe is figuring that out. We talked about this yesterday with Saros, right? Like, he's in the conversation for the Vezina Trophy, and you know, obviously they gave up 5 last night. Now one of them's an empty netter, but I did think he made a couple of the saves last night. We were just like, geez, all right, that sounds good. He still looks pretty good out there. That game could have been 6 or 7 to 1 last night. So how good is the team? I mean, that's what we've been trying to figure out. How good is that? How good is this team really? You got an elite goalie. You have players last year who set all sorts of individual and franchise records, and you were the last team to get in the playoffs in the Western Conference. And this year you have a goalie once again that's in the conversation for the Vezina Trophy, and right now you're out of the playoffs. And we talked about how big of a game that was last night from the Vegas point of view. Number one, the Pacific Division is just insanely close to each other, and it's going to be that way all year long. But if you win that game in regulation last night, if you're the Predators, all of a sudden you're only 6 points back of Vegas, and you got 3 games in hand on them. Well, now that you've lost, you're 10 points back of Vegas. I mean, it's a huge swing last night when it comes to chasing down that team specifically. And, yeah, the point that Bob brings up there, Joe, is I think the crux of what everybody's actually trying to discover about this team and what it means for the path they're about to take.
Right, and it's just like we talked about with the meeting, you know, the meeting discussion. It's like, good, you know, good for you. You had an honest, raw meeting. There were some important things said. We saw some response from people, right? Some people who were directly, you know, involved in the discussions and who have needed to play better all year. But if you need to, like, it's like the old Reebok pumps, you know. Now let me date myself again. You know, if you need to, like, pump it up to a certain point, you know, like, it's not going to stay there, right? Eventually, the air's going to go out. Like, the talent level is such that you have to bring it at a higher level in this league, or this team isn't good enough. And I agree, there are too many people past their prime. There are too many veteran players on this team who, on a lot of nights, to me, just aren't making the impact you expect. And I think it's, again, I'm not saying that you don't look at, you know, effort, intensity, desire, all that stuff. But I mean, to me, it's like they have to be extra because the talent level isn't what some people have said it is or think it is. And again, I'll raise my hand on that too. I thought this team was absolutely better than it is right now.
Well, the bottom line
and
is,
I just, you know, I think it's going to be ups and downs all the way. And my question is, are they going to really hang in this race?
Well, the bottom line is, I agree with everything you just said there. If you're being realistic about it, you can't do that every night. Like, you cannot manufacture that sort of I don't know if it's work ethic is the right word, or going above and beyond every night in an 82-game season. It's just – it's too much. It can't just be about the work. It can't just be about the effort level. You know, the meeting part of this, you know, it's a thing we talked about in the aftermath of it. That's great. All right, cool. They responded good. You beat L.A. the night, you know, the game after the meeting. Two impressive wins against Winnipeg and Jersey to close things out. All that's great. But, like, at some point, the meeting part of it's gonna fade, and you can't just be having meetings every 2 days. Eventually that loses its luster a little bit.
They needed an in-game meeting last night. They have. It might have made all the difference. But you're right. I also say at this point, the position they've put themselves in, they better be a desperate team every night. That's like, right? I mean, it's their only chance with the hole that they've dug now.
No question about it. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation on the Predators, including some comments from Matt Duchene in the locker room after the game last night. We'll get into those coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. This year, the only app you need at your Super Bowl party is FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Download FanDuel now and use promo code ROB so you can bet Super Bowl 57 with a no-sweat first bet. You get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to who will score a touchdown. I've been consistent on the Eagles all week long. I feel good about it. I feel good about Jalen Hurts as an anytime touchdown scorer running the ball as well. But you take it any way you want to take it, all on a top-rated sportsbook app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Best of all, you can get paid your winnings instantly. So join FanDuel today with promo code ROB to claim your no-sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Hey, Preds fans, if you want to win tickets in our Lower Bowl Section 102, just text the keyword Superbook, all one word. Once again, that's Superbook, all one word, to the game text line at 615-737-1025, and you'll be entered for your chance to win. You can win with 1025-1063 the game, and you can win with Superbook. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on 1025-1063 the game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Preds lose last night 5-1 at the hands of the Vegas Golden Knights in a big game last night for the Predators, and it does not go well. 17 shots on goal, only 6 shots on goal after the first 2 periods of play last night. And Matt Duchene discussed the performance of the Predators last night after the game down in the Predators locker room. Here's what Predators forward Matt Duchene had to say after the game last night.
Just kind of left scratching your head a little bit, Matt, after you guys have been playing so well going into the break.
No, not at all. Just, you know, we got it what we deserved tonight, and 12 days off, it's tough to find it again. And sometimes, and you, like I just said, you know, it's usually the team that's with the least rust that comes out. And we, you know, we kind of gave them a chance to feel good. Just, you know, there were some tough breaks. I mean, the first goal against, the guy fans on the shot, the guy fans on his pass to that guy. Second one, puck rolls on Yost, guy gets a breakaway. You know, third one, kind of similar play. So, but again, despite the tough breaks offensively and defensively, we didn't play well enough. We didn't get enough shots through. We took a lot of shots and they didn't get through. I mean, having, 8-10 shots after 2 periods isn't good enough. And I thought, you know, our decisions were better in the second and third period, but, you know, you got to get pucks through at the end of the day or, you know, keep possession until you can break them down. They did a great job, you know, crowding the house and blocking shots. So it's disappointing, but the 3 days here, you know, we'll be ready for Philly. I know this team is hungry, and maybe losing this one's the best thing that could have happened with how we play tonight so that we get back into gear.
So that was Matt Duchene after the game, and I will give that guy a lot of credit, Joe. He is the most optimistic human being I think I've ever been around in my entire life.
As we left, I was like, you know, Might be the best thing for me that I just got hit with a truck and I lost my leg. I mean, it's just like, oh my God, like whatever may happen, you know, Matt Duchene will find, you know, will find the positive,
It's a great quality to have.
It is like in your daily life, if you can find the positive in whatever may happen, I tell you what, that is absolutely a superpower. I mean, I remember how mad people were. Yeah, I look at it a little differently now when you go back to the bubble,
Yeah.
you know, because I mean, he got, and I mean, all of us were just like, what? Because I basically, you know, when to paraphrase, he's like, yeah, you know, our game really got better. I really liked our game. We really, like, after they lost in four games to Arizona, you know, and it was like, what? And then, of course, last year you got the, the Preds are, you know, the Avs remind me of like work can be like the Avs in a couple of years type thing. And it's like, nah, not sure I'm seeing that there, pal. But yeah, so that's the thing. That is who he is. He is eternally optimistic, looking for the. So I think it's more the absolute relentless optimism than excuse making. But I mean, to come out of that game and be like, this might be the best thing for us is just, man, it's a take.
It's a take. Now, look, he also talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think the phrase that he used was maybe the St. Louis game was a blessing in disguise when he started talking about the meeting and everything that happened after that. So I get what he's saying. I get what he's trying to say. And like you said, he is the optimist. But the problem with that, Joe, is there's really not a loss that could be the best thing for you right now just based on where you are in the standings, right? Like we've talked about the margin for error that this team has, and it's not a lot just based on the way that you've kind of dug a hole for yourselves here. I mean, again, I'm going by the numbers on the playoff odds and all that. They're at 31% yesterday. You lost that game, they're down to 23. I mean, it took a pretty big hit yesterday. So that's where you're at in the standings right now. The odds would tell you don't have a very good chance to make the playoffs. So each loss, especially losses in regulation at home against teams that you're competing with for a playoff spot, are an absolute gut punch, and that was a bad one for the Predators yesterday.
Yeah, and again, it's like how many, oh, this will be the kick in pants we need, or here's another meeting or whatever. Like, how many of those how many of those do you need? How many of those are really relevant? I mean, again, I think the overall story of this team is that it's not good enough. At this point, it's going to take a heck of a run. At this point, we got a pretty good, what are we talking, 50? Is it 49 games of evidence?
That is correct.
Yeah, you know, it's not a playoff team. It's not a playoff caliber team. Is it still in position to change that? Yeah, but you know, for the most part, you know, there's some things that have been pretty consistent, including a lot of players who were counted on to do more who haven't done enough, and of course the power play, which by the way, it was a couple. No, there was one doozy of a power play last night.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, I don't even. And again, that's where, and we've seen it before, certainly with the Preds, a totally different, you know, season and everything, but I feel like when you get to a certain point of struggling with that, I feel like it's like so hard to overcome that mentally and execute sharply the way you should be. And I just don't expect it to get that much better.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Rob from Franklin. Rob, thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, boys. So listening to Duchene's quote, it harkens me back to Monty Python, and it's merely just a flesh wound. So we just got our leg. How apropos, right? Because it was Vegas Golden Knights hacking our leg off there. Is thou shall not pass. Well, we passed. They passed. They went through.
Nice.
They went through us like a knife through butter, and we had 12 shots after two periods. Well, I'm glad that Duchene and Johansson had some fun in the Bahamas or wherever they were, but they came back with a log in their legs, and it was just horrible. And so just one, you know, that is my analogy of the day. They were awful. They were slow. They were non-motivated. And this is, you know, guess what, guys? We're paying $100 to $200 a ticket to watch that? I'd rather go watch 16U hockey double A that is motivated. So as we move into this structure of Poile, and oh my gosh, he's been here since 1997-98 and he's so successful. How about this? How about structuring a contract that looks like Duchesne's, where it's actually the one thing he did right is he structured it high end and then low end. What I mean by that is it's loaded. It was loaded in the beginning and it's not as much in the end. So if we can get rid of him for some type of draft pick, because he is the person that is not motivated. He skates some days, he doesn't skate others. And it's horrible to watch.
Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. I mean, the Duchesne part of this, I mean, the trade protection that kicks in towards the end of the contract, I mean, his salary does come down, but the problem is, Joe, his cap hit doesn't, right? I mean, that's ultimately what really matters, is if you're trying to move somebody, the cap hit is the main thing, right? Like, if your cap hit is $8 million, especially right now with the way the NHL is set up with their salary cap, I mean, you're not going to find anybody that's taking that Matt Duchesne contract. I'd be shocked.
No. Yeah, I agree. I mean, and like Johansson with a shorter term, I mean, if he were playing better, you know. But, no, I mean, it's – and that's the thing. Poile, obviously, forever was able to resist all the NMC stuff. And some – you know, it's kind of been broken down recently, I guess, right? Is that because – it's just more the way of the league, or is it just that, you know, well, he's been in situations where he's had to relent on that?
I think he's been in situations where he's had to relent on it. Like Yossi, I think you had to do it. I think Forsberg, you probably had to do it. I mean, Duchesne's is a modified one, but again,
right.
Like it's not a full no movement. You could trade him, but again, it's more about the cap hit now with him. Like it's his age and the cap hit. It's probably not going to happen, would be my guess. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get back into the hiring of Tim Kelly as Titans offensive coordinator. We'll also take a look at some of the other changes that the Titans made on the offensive staff and on the defensive staffs as well, and get Rex Rhodes' thoughts on that. That's all next. This is Robbie and Rex Rhodes, 1025-1063, the game.
Yeah, Mike, with Tim already on staff last season, did you consider expanding his role in this way previously, either before the season, during it at some point? And a couple of years ago, did you make an attempt to kind of reach out and talk to him for that then?
You know, there's, you know, I have to make decisions, Gentry, and I don't know if, you know, during the season, anything really would have mattered. I really don't. And I think that what I'm focused on is where we go, you know, from here, where we're able to grow, where we're able to find a way to protect our quarterback, find a way to continue to drive the football, have less non-efficient plays and runs, and be able to convert third downs, score touchdowns, get to the red zone more often. I stand behind what we do in the red zone. We just got to get down there more often. You know, and so, you know, I mean, I've met with Tim, you know, he was under contract in Houston. So, you know, when we were able to add him, you know, we added him in some capacity.
That was Mike Vrabel yesterday discussing the hiring of Tim Kelly as offensive coordinator by the Tennessee Titans. We're taking your thoughts all show long, 615-737-1025. Speaking of that, I got a 4-pack of wristbands to give away to the 50th annual National Wild Turkey Federation Convention at Opryland coming up on Wednesday, February 16th through Friday, February the 18th. Be caller number 5 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a four-pack of wristbands to the 50th Annual National Wild Turkey Federation Convention at Opryland next Wednesday, February 16th through Friday, February 18th. 615-737-1025. So, Joe, what did you make of Rabel's comments there on his interest in Tim Kelly, whether or not he considered that previously before making the move now, and his comments on the red zone offense for the Titans as well?
Yeah, well, again, that was a year ago, sort of what he presented in defense of Todd Downing when he pretty much made it clear right after the playoff game, the playoff loss to Cincinnati, that, well, really, he made it clear that Downing would be back and that Tannehill would be back. You got to be great around Tannehill was the quote that we all remember from that presser. But also he talked about third down and red zone, the situational numbers with, you know, with Downing. And of course, everything got worse this year. But as far as the idea, and I think it was a good question, you know, by Gentry. There was a lot of questions yesterday that, like, Vrabel wouldn't really answer a lot of stuff about Tim Kelly, just like with Jim Schwartz, very kind of vague generalities about these things. Not a big fan of, you know, basically asking about or answering questions about, I guess, people in, like, support roles, right? Yep. So now that you hired him as OC, okay, so what did he do? What did he do here? And also that question, which is fair. I get the question. Like, did you consider, you know, putting him in a different role? And I understand that it has happened before where, like, a coordinator will, like, lose their jobs in the middle of a season and then someone else will get plugged in. I mean, typically that's done by, I bet you 99% of those situations, those moves are made by a coach, either with pressure of the owner in pro sports or the AD in college sports, who's on the verge of being fired himself, right? It wasn't, like, to me, there's really very little logic and reason in making a move like that. It's like, if this is nothing but just call and plays, okay, then that's one thing, but it's not that. There's a ton of work that goes into being an OC, a ton of different aspects of the job. So I don't see why that would have been a good move. And Vrabel kind of said it. I mean, he said, like, I don't think it would have made a difference, to paraphrase him. And what he's saying in a lot of his comments yesterday and a lot of his comments all last season, and you can call it excuse making if you want, but frankly, I'm completely on board with it. What he's saying is that the players weren't good enough. they couldn't find answers because they couldn't block people and they couldn't get open. And that doesn't excuse Downing and some of the stuff he did as OC. He wasn't good, but, like, making some switch in season to me would not have been some magical potion or some huge enhancement to what they were doing. They were in a bad spot last season.
So what do you make of some of the other moves that the Titans have made here with guys that were already on their staff? So Luke Steckel, as we know, got interviewed by the Chargers for their OC spot. He was the tight ends coach. He's now the run game analyst. Tony Dews, who has been the running backs coach, is now the tight ends coach. So kind of flipping things around there. Pat O'Hara was the quarterback coach, and now he's the pass game analyst. So some of these titles coming in. Just got people that have been on the staff for the Titans on the offensive side of the ball that are now in different roles with different titles. What do you make of what the Titans have done on that from that standpoint?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's one thing we haven't talked about is they did bring in a new voice. Of course, Charles London, who was QB coach for the Falcons last year. Now, like Kelly, and some people really don't like this, we're going to have Kaharski on, and he asked a question yesterday about using the word insular, you know, about Vrabel's hires. Charles London was with Vrabel in Houston, too. So there is a link there. There's the trust. There's the relationship there. People don't like this when the coach who's making the hire has lost 7 straight games. I get that, but it's still someone who was with the Falcons prior to that. He's with the Bears. Those are the two stops he had after the Titans. So now he's also got the pass game coordinator title. Again, let's remember the phrase agent crap. Okay. He's a QB coach. He's coming in to be the QB coach. I have to look at that as a demotion for Pat O'Hara. Pat O'Hara is now, God, I don't have it in front of me. What is he? Is he pass game analyst?
Pass game analyst. Yes.
Okay. And Luke Steckel, who, yes, just hired, interviewed to be the Chargers OC, is run game analyst and is no longer coaching tight end. So I have to look at both of those as demotions. Now, if you're Mike Vrabel and you can retain those guys who you obviously trusted, have had on your staff, and then you can add people, then in theory that strengthens you, right? But, I mean, my question for an O'Hare and a Steckel is, like, how do those guys feel about this, you know? I mean, I wouldn't think they'd feel great about it. So, you know, it's – and then, I mean, to me, the move that makes – that screams Amy Adams Strunk on these firings, okay? And I'm not saying I know this beyond a shadow of a doubt. When you fire Keith Carter as your O-line coach and then you – and then you hire his offensive, his O-line assistant.
Yep.
I mean, to me, that kind of sounds like Mike Vrabel was told you need to fire some people. I don't know if he was told you need to fire these specific people. I would think with Downing, that would probably be the case. Again, maybe he was going to do it anyway. Okay. But Jason Hotailing, and I asked Vrabel about this yesterday, kind of like, okay, so you fire the O-line. It's like we talk about, like, with Barry Trotz, you know? It's like, okay, so we need to move on from you, but we're going to hire your protege who believes in everything you do. And like, huh?
Right.
Like, did you want a new direction or not? I'm just saying, it's like whenever that happens, there's always the possibility that Keith Carter, personally, there was just some issue with him or something, you know? They didn't think he was reaching the players or whatever. But a lot of this does speak to Vrabel thinking, as he said clearly, that things aren't, quote, broken. So I thought that was the one that really spoke to maybe the idea that, you know, maybe Vrabel was encouraged to make some moves. Another one with Tony Dews, you know, that's he goes from running backs coach to tight ends coach. The Titans still need to hire a running backs coach. For Tony Dews, that's, I mean, you have a lot more looks, I think, just like Vrabel has hired tight ends coaches to be OC, if you're a tight ends coach in this league than if you're a running backs coach in this league in terms of possibly being an OC. You know, tight ends coach, we've talked about it, you're involved in the run game and the pass game now. You know, I guess you are with the running backs too, but you know what I mean? It's different. Yeah. Like you're heavily involved, you know, in the offense, especially an offense like this. So for him, that's a good outcome. And it gives him more of a possibility to possibly get an OC look at some point.
Well, one of the things that Vrabel talked about yesterday as far as the offensive line was concerned was talking about developing players. And he talked about how just because a player shows up here one way, we don't care how they get here. We care what you do once you get here. And it's talking about how they've got to do a better job at developing their players. Now, you know, was that a veiled shot at Keith Carter? I don't know, but obviously, when you start to think about some of the offensive linemen that they've either drafted or gone out and signed over the course of the past couple of years, it has not gone overly well for the Titans at this point. Now, you could easily just say, well, yeah, you're picking bad offensive linemen where you're either drafting those guys or you're signing them. But Vrabel did talk about you got to find a way to develop some of these guys too, which the Titans really have not done for the most part over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. I mean, it could be that, you know, Vrabel just didn't feel like Keith Carter's job performance was up to snuff. I mean, Keith Carter and his time with the Titans, when they had Note Lewan and Nate Davis was a struggling rookie and Roger Saffold was a struggling early free agent, and Conklin was still coming off a knee and all this stuff, he was the worst. I mean, we have a certain afternoon host on our station who was absolutely, he must be fired.
Yep.
And all of a sudden later that year and the whole next year, it's like, wow, Keith Carter, this guy is making magic. You know, I mean, it's as people get healthier and people get better and all that, I feel like he got some players better in his time. I don't know what you do with Dennis Daly as your left tackle. You know, I don't know what you do now. Nate Davis, this is where it also – you can look at just about all these players and say, well, if that guy was healthy, then, you know. So, I don't know. But it is interesting. And of course, also Vrabel in that question said it was one of the best interviews he's had in 5 years as a coach when he talked about hotailing. So there you go.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We'll do that next. Make sure you join 1025-1063 The Game this Saturday at 3rd and Home, located at 919 3rd Avenue North in Germantown, for a Preds watch party as the Preds take on the Philadelphia Flyers at 11:30 a.m. Come watch the game, get some Preds swag, and also enter for a chance to win tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. That's coming up on Saturday as the Predators take on the Philadelphia Flyers. The Rex Rant coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rex Road, the floor is yours. I turn things over to you.
Well, this today I told myself, you know what I'm going to do is it's almost like you spin the wheel, you know, and you just put your finger on it.
Sure.
And just, okay. So I knew that today that the text line was going to be popping, and I knew that it would probably piss me off a fair amount. And again, not because, you know, someone on there was like, oh, we cannot question Vrabel's divinity. You know, again, I don't think that's true at all. Coach loses 7 straight games. This offense was utterly awful to watch. It's totally fair to question him. And I don't know if this will work out. But I told myself, whatever's on the text line at the time of your rant, you go ahead and hit that, and I bet you it's a pretty good discussion. So let's go there. Actually, a couple. First of all, this is a little bit of a side, remark, but Mike says, if Vrabel says make an offensive coordinator change in the middle of the season wouldn't have made much of a difference, why did he make a quarterback change from Mariota to Tannehill during the season? Granted, Mariota had some injury issues, but make no mistake, he was benched for Tannehill. Yeah, he was benched for Tannehill. And my response in the text line was, you don't see the difference between coaching and playing? I mean, you know, the player benching is totally different than hey, let's take this support staffer who doesn't even coach a position and come in, and now you're the new coordinator of something. Like, again, I think some of this is like, I think, you know, obviously the part of the OC that we see is the front facing game day calling plays. Like, it's not just that, right?
Sure.
You're completely changing your entire operation if you do that. And that would also say that Todd Downing, it's like Todd Downing was just going rogue, going in there like, hey, I'm going to call some crappy plays and run into the line. Again, Vrabel's there for the game planning. He's there for practice. He knows what they're going to do. He knows what all the plays are that are in the playbook for a particular game. He knows what the game plan is. He may not know the exact sequence. That's on Todd Downing, you know, to make those decisions during the game. But like the OC is not like some independent agent out here just calling random plays. Like, they are all working on this together, and they sucked, and they mostly sucked because their players sucked. That said, Adam in Portland on the text line. Vrabel's answer, I don't think it was that bad, tells me everything I need to know. Friend of the show, Adam in Portland, a frequent caller. Okay, now back to Adam in Portland. Okay, let me read Adam in Portland again. Vrabel's answer, I don't think it was that bad, tells me everything I need to know. I stopped listening at that point. Settle in, boys. More tight end screen fake to the left and tight end throw screen to the right for a 2-yard gain, because Vrabel doesn't think it was that bad. Again, man, rip Vrabel left and right. Take away his palm malls, whatever you want to do. But do you think that Mike Vrabel enjoyed last season? Like, do you think he wasn't looking for answers himself? I mean, I think the thing is, I think sometimes people don't want to put enough on him because, again, this is his offense. This is his team. This is his offensive coordinator calling plays that he knows about. And he knows about the game plans. But also, like, do you think that Vrabel is just out here to, like, just, like, hang out with his buddies and laugh as everybody gets pissed off when they score 11 points a game? Mike Vrabel's offense, game planning, play calling, team, everything. 2 years ago was the exact same offense and one of the absolute best in the NFL. You could argue it was the best offense in the NFL. It, right, basically the Chiefs, and then you could put the Titans right after them 2 years ago. So do you think that Vrabel likes this crap or just wants to hire his friends or isn't trying to find answers right now? I don't know if he'll find them. If he doesn't, he should be on the hot seat. If this hire is bad, he should be on the hot seat. But, like, do you really think that isn't it just as angry about all this and sick of it as you are? That's my question.
Well, it's a good question. Look, I think deep down we know the answer to that, right? Like, we know that Vrabel, as much as anybody else, wants to get this fixed and move. Now, I will say, look, I fully believe that Vrabel believes that Tim Kelly is the right person for the job right now, otherwise he wouldn't have made the hire. Now, is he the right person for the job right now because nobody else wants the job right now, or is he the right person for the job right now because he's who the Titans and Vrabel have wanted all along? I don't know, and I'm with you when it comes to the fact that I think he's trying to do what's in the best interest of the offense and trying to get this offense as productive as possible. I agree with all that. Now, having said that, like it or not, this is another hire that he's made that is one of his buddies, one of his friends, and a person that he's worked with. So to me, if it doesn't work out, it is a fair criticism to look back and say, all right, well, maybe you need to go hire somebody else outside of the organization. Even if it's something that you're not overly comfortable with doing, maybe you need to go do that. Because the last two times, you know, if it doesn't work out with Kelly, the last two times you would have done it, not a great look offensive for your offense and with offensive coordinators. So I agree with you. Like, I don't think Vrabel is just saying, you know what, forget the rest of the league. I know the best. I'm hiring people that I'm comfortable working with, and that's going to be the way I do things moving forward. But the fact is, that's the way it's played out. And if it doesn't work, he needs to be criticized for that.
Sure. Yeah, but that's the thing. And I don't think we're going to have a clear answer on this. I think there's some indications that he was. There's a lot of on the text line, too, like these are sham interviews and all this stuff. Now, I think Vrabel may have overstated, you know, numerous and how many people and all that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was a sham that he was out there looking at other people. And I think you may have hit on something. I mean, I think it sounds, based on the reporting that's been out there, like there's some, I don't know about that. Thanks, but no thanks. And I wouldn't blame people. Because the thing is, the bigger issue last year is that the pieces you had to work with were real problematic.
Right.
And right now that hasn't changed. It may change. It's going to take a hell of an offseason for Rand Carthon to change it all in one offseason. So, like, I can understand why people would be hesitant. So, is this Vrabel's backup plan we'll go with Kelly? It could be. And I think fans would probably feel better about that if they knew that for certain. Of course, he would never say that, right?
Sure.
But the timing of it is interesting. I don't think you needed to wait this long for this. And some of the stuff Vrabel has said sounded like he's waiting for someone, and all of a sudden they figured out, well, you don't need to wait for someone anymore. But another thing to bring up real quick is, you're right. I mean, these are all, you know, hire is people he worked with or whatever. You know, the one exception, and I'm talking at the coordinator level. Well, LaFleur is an exception because that was when he came in, and that was kind of done for him. But Downing actually is kind of an exception. Like, Downing was here, but he was a hire from outside, you know, for tight ends. You know, which is interesting. So actually, he was a lot less of a, like, quote unquote, in the Vrabel family than these other people like Bowen and and everything. So, and of course, that's the one so far that hasn't worked out. But yeah, if this one also doesn't work out, you can't just blame personnel. Of course, you have to look at coaching decisions and coaching hires. And I think it's clear, like, Titans fans are. Have a much different view, I think, of Vrabel than they did seven losses ago.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. 615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. We'll get his thoughts on the hiring of Tim Kelly as Titans offensive coordinator. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, 1025-1063, The Game.